compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, hello there, Patrick Madrid reporting for duty. Thank you for listening to this program, and thank you for listening to all of the Relevant Radio programs. We're here for you 24/7. My number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. We have lines open we have lines open for you right now, and you're welcome to call in at your leisure. I'd like to start off with an email that I got from a very nice lady who listens to the program. And I'll give her first name. Her name is Helen, and I'll leave it at that. So Helen is writing in response to the comments that you and I discussed, that I made and that we discussed several times over the last, by now, probably the last couple of weeks, about the marital act. And she has a response to the things that I was talking about. And I'd like to read it to you. And one reason is because you may well have heard something like this from maybe a priest, perhaps, or somebody else who has told you something that's not exactly correct. And so for the purposes of trying to clarify things that the church teaches over against misconceptions, misimpressions, and unfortunately, in some cases, outright errors, I'd like to share with you. So I'll start with what Helen wrote to me a couple of days ago. Dear Patrick, I listen to your show on Relevant Radio frequently and enjoy it. I was listening the other day when you talked about the marital act. What I gleaned, and by the way, this is not kid-friendly, so as whenever a topic like this arises, I want to give parents fair warning so that you can either turn the radio down for a few minutes or shoo the children into a different room. If you're taking them to school right now, just turn the radio down. So this is not age-appropriate for children. Older high school, say like a senior in high school and above, I don't think that would be a problem. But below that, I think it would be a problem. So fair warning, ready, steady, go. Dear Patrick, I listen to your show on Relevant Radio frequently and I enjoy it. I was listening the other day when you talked about the marital act. What I gleaned was that the only regular coupling was allowed, or that only the regular coupling was allowed, and everything else that did not end that way is considered a serious sin. I was dismayed. My husband and I have been intimate in other than the normal way for a few years due to his loss of function. I prayed about it and went to confession asking for clarity. The pastor at my parish said there is the letter of the law and the spirit of the law, and that in my case, it was fine. I was relieved and happy. I had been reluctant yet quite prepared to give up the marital act with my husband of 41 years totally if it was considered a sin in the way we have been doing it. Perhaps I misconstrued your explanation since it has to be vague. I'm hoping your other listeners, if concerned with this matter, will consult a knowledgeable priest to discuss it. Maybe next time you could amend your explanation by saying go see a priest for clarity. And this is from Helen. First of all, Helen, thank you. It's a very cogent question that you're asking, or maybe you're not really asking a question, but I'd like to respond to what you're saying here in this way. Number one, you are correct when you said that you gleaned from what I was saying that the only regular coupling that is allowed, you know, that is morally permissible by the church is the natural way in which this act is completed in such a way that it is open to the possibility of the transmission of life. And I will repeat what I said earlier, any other way of completing the act that is intentional, sometimes it can be unintentional and nobody's at fault, but in the case where it's intentional and what you're describing in your email is intentional, it is a serious sin. That is the church's teaching. And in this case, while I can understand why the parish priest might want to make you feel better or make you feel less worried or wants, I don't know what the motivation would be for a priest to give bad advice, but I'm sorry to say that is bad advice. And for him to say, well, you know, the letter of the law says this, but the spirit of the law, you can go ahead and do that. In your case, it's okay. with all due respect to him, I'm sure he's a fine man and probably an excellent priest. So, and I don't know him, so I have nothing to say with regard to him as a person other than that what he's telling you is incorrect. That is not what the church teaches. And priests, you're not doing lay people who come to you in confession any favors if you don't tell them the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. If you're telling married couples that it's okay to do things like what Helen is alluding to, you're leading them down the road to hell. And I hate to say it in that way, but that's really what it amounts to. Where people genuinely want to know the truth, and if you don't tell them the truth, or if you tell them, worse yet, something that is actually erroneous, it has serious consequences. So my humble plea to parish priests is, please, for people's eternal souls and your own, tell them the truth. And sometimes the truth is difficult. Sometimes it's very difficult. Like, let's take the woman caught in adultery in the gospel. What did Jesus say to her? He forgave her of her sins. Where are your accusers? Is there no one here to accuse you? No, they've all left. And Jesus says to her, he says, go and sin no more. He doesn't say, well, you know, the letter of the law says you can't commit adultery, but the spirit of the law, and in your case, it's okay. Now, I realize that adultery is not the same thing as the kind of sin that Helen is referring to. They are related, however, even though they're not the same thing. So you wouldn't say to the woman, go and, in the spirit of the law, go ahead and commit this sin again if, you know, the circumstances warrant it. And no, Jesus said, go and sin no more. So just to put a fine point on it, if I may, I would like to draw your attention, Helen, to what the Catechism of the Catholic Church says. And I would recommend just begin reading in paragraph 2331. And this section goes from 2331 all the way to 2400. So it's a lengthy section, and I will just give you a few quotes from this, but I want to make sure that you understand that it's not just like my opinion or this, that I'm a rigorist and I'm just saying, well, you have to do this because I say so. No, my opinion has nothing to do with anything. My job on this microphone is to do my best to try to explain and transmit what the Catholic Church teaches on whatever the issue may be that comes up. And this is an issue that, as we all have seen, has been of great interest to many people, given the emails and the countless phone calls that have come in. So let's just say the following. In marriage, God ordained that the union of the husband and the wife be accomplished in a way, as I said earlier, that is open to the transmission, open to the possibility of the transmission of life. And that means that it takes place, or should take place, in a particular way. And really, again, there is only one way that it can take place, so that the possibility is there. It doesn't mean that the Lord will necessarily bless you with a child. And for couples who are beyond childbearing age, or if there's a medical condition, or any number of other things, those things are proper to marriage, but they're ordered toward procreation. So the act has to be completed that way. And I don't think I'm overemphasizing this, because it seems that there are many people for whom this is like, what? Nobody ever told me that. Or in the case of what we're talking about with you, Helen, it's somebody has told you exactly the opposite. So from the Catechism, let's begin in paragraph 2352. And this gets to the heart of what you're describing. You didn't describe it, but what you're alluding to. Paragraph 2352, under the topic of masturbation, is to be understood that the deliberate stimulation of the genital organs in order to derive sexual pleasure, both the magisterium of the church in the course of a constant tradition and the moral sense of the faithful have been in no doubt and have firmly maintained that this is an intrinsically and gravely disordered action. The deliberate use of the sexual faculty for whatever reason outside of marriage is essentially contrary to its purpose. For here, sexual pleasure is sought outside of the sexual relationship, which is demanded by the moral order, and in which the total meaning of mutual self-giving and human procreation in the context of true love is achieved. Now, I'd like to break that down a little bit. It refers tangentially to these acts outside of marriage, so with somebody else who's not your husband or wife, or two unmarried people. But nonetheless, it's referring also to within marriage. In other words, I'll repeat that last line. Sexual pleasure, if it is sought outside of the sexual relationship, which is demanded by the moral order, and that's referring to the marital act accomplished naturally, and in which the total meaning of mutual self-giving and human procreation, there it is again, in the context of true love is achieved. So that's the, you might say, the natural habitat of this act. And please, I draw your attention to the words that using the sexual faculty outside of that for the purpose of a conclusion that doesn't conclude in the natural way, the Catechism says, is intrinsically and a gravely disordered action. I hesitate to read more only because the Catechism, although it is not like explicit in a graphic kind of way, nonetheless, it's speaking about these issues in a very direct way. So I'm going to maybe omit a couple of maybe a little bit more intense passages, and I'll read to you one or two more. So paragraph 2360, sexuality is ordered to the conjugal love of man and woman. In marriage, the physical intimacy of the spouses becomes a sign and pledge of spiritual communion. Marriage bonds between baptized persons are sanctified by the sacrament. Sexuality, by means of which man and woman give themselves to one another through the acts which are proper and exclusive to spouses, is not something simply biological, but concerns the innermost being of the human person as such. It is realized in a truly human way only if it is an integral part of the love by which a man and a woman commit themselves totally one to another until death. And as I quoted from the earlier passage, that involves the total self-giving, involves fecundity, which is fertility, and not saying, well, I'm going to give you all of myself except for this part of it. It's a total self-giving, the church says. Paragraph 2362, the acts in marriage by which the intimate and chaste union of spouses take place are noble and honorable. The truly human performance of these acts fosters the self-giving they signify and enriches the spouses in joy and gratitude. The spouse's union achieves the twofold end of marriage, the good of the spouses themselves and the transmission of life. These two meanings or values of marriage cannot be separated without altering the couple's spiritual life and compromising the goods of marriage and the future of the family. The conjugal love of man and woman thus stands under the twofold obligation of fidelity and fecundity. Fecundity is that word that means fertility, or when fertility is achieved. It's one of the meanings of this. So I don't want to pile on. I certainly don't want to cause a rift between you and the priest who is your friend and your confessor. I'm sure, as I say, he's a fine man. But I have to tell you, this is what the church has always taught. This is what the church teaches. And I'm here to try to just simply explain it as best I can. But I do encourage you, read these sections from the Catechism, because there it is in black and white. And you know one thing that you will not find? You will not find here in the Catechism, or for that matter, any other place, where it says, okay, this is the letter of the law. But if you feel like you should break the law and do something other than that, then that's okay for you. The Catechism does not say that. And the reason is because Jesus doesn't say that. So I hope that's helpful, Helen, and perhaps you still disagree with me, but I wanted you to at least see that this is not me saying this. The church herself says this. And I offer you that for your consideration. 888-914-9149. This email comes in from Joe in Chicago. He says, good morning, Patrick. My wife and I just welcomed our first child into the world in August. I was raised a Lutheran, and my wife is a non-denominational Christian. However, I have been moving toward the Catholic faith for a couple of years now, thanks to Relevant Radio, Bishop Sheen, and a lot of spiritual reading. Boy, that's an unbeatable combination right there, Joe. Awesome. He says, I'm now ready to pull the trigger and start RCIA and bring my family into the faith. However, I was informed that I cannot have my daughter baptized in the Catholic Church until we have become full-fledged members of the church. Should I get her baptized at one of our old Protestant churches or wait until Easter when she can be baptized in the Catholic Church? I am very anxious to get her baptized promptly. I would appreciate any guidance you can offer. Good question, Joe. Now, you didn't mention how old your daughter is, so I presume she's still little and maybe even an infant. It is not, strictly speaking, the case that you yourself have to be first received into the church. That's ideal, obviously. And it's ideal because the church expects parents who are going to have their children baptized to be the primary teachers of the faith so that they will bring these children to school, to church, and have them educated in the faith and receive the other sacraments of initiation and to teach them to pray and to love Jesus, etc. So ideally, that would be the optimal situation. But it's not something that is insurmountable. So one thing you could do is you could ask your parish priest, perhaps start there, and just say, under the circumstances, we are planning to come into the church. We are committed to coming into the church, and we're going to go through our CIA. We make a commitment, and I'll even sign an affidavit if that would be helpful, committing that if we can have our child baptized, that we will follow through and we will make sure that he or she is, or she, I guess, is raised in the faith. That might be a way to assuage any concerns or doubts that the parish priest might have. He might say, oh, you don't have to worry about that. I believe you. But maybe he hasn't heard you say that. Now, if that's the case, because I'm just going to go out on a limb here and assume that your daughter is an infant. Infants don't require preparation. Infants don't need to be instructed in the faith for obvious reasons. They can't assimilate any of this knowledge. So it's not as though she has to wait, but if you can explain this in a way that the priest says, okay, that makes sense. Yes, I'll baptize your child. That's great. And then you are going through the RCIA process. Some of you listening are saying, the what? What is that, RCIA? What does that mean? It stands for Rite of Christian Initiation of Adults. Rite of Christian Initiation of Adults. And if you were to go through that, then in due time, perhaps on the Easter Vigil of next year, you would come into the church. But even that, too, is not set in stone. It's not as though you have to do that in order to become Catholic. It's the custom, and most parishes ask you to follow that path. But if in conversation with the parish priest, he says, you know what, I'll meet with you privately. Come meet with me for an hour every Wednesday evening for the next 6 weeks, and I'll give you instructions in the faith, and then I can receive you into the church. The priest has the wherewithal to do that. He can do that, and it's up to the prudential judgment of the parish priest to make that decision. So that's another option that you can pursue. Not everybody does. I'd say most people don't, because RCIA is a very good thing, and it's good for you to be able to learn the basics of the faith from the ground up. One last thing, and I've got to take a break. I would recommend that you call Father Richard Simon. His program is Father Simon Says. He's on every afternoon here in Chicago, and he's actually a priest of Chicago. So since that happens to be the area that you live in, he's practically your next-door neighbor. I would recommend you give him a call in the afternoon. You could even call him today at 888-914-9149. We all share the same number. And maybe even off the air, perhaps, you could get some advice from him. He might know a priest who would be a good person to make contact with and get some further information. But he's a very knowledgeable man himself, and I think he knows everybody in the Archdiocese, so he would be a good place to start. Again, that's Father Richard Simon. His show is called Father Simon Says. He's on every afternoon right here on Relevant Radio. Now, I'm going to take a break. Thanks for that email. And I'd love to hear down the road how things work out for you, Joe. I'll say a little prayer that everything is smooth and easy. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. Let me ask you, can the Catholic Church have a future if we Catholics don't understand our past? Experience history the way it should be taught in a free online class from Christendom College. Just go to principlesclasses.com.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Okay, we are back. 888-914-9149. And so it continues. More and more and more and more interest in this bigger picture topic of the Marital Act. So you asked for it, so I want to answer the questions that are on your mind. And in the last few minutes, two more emails came in on this topic. But what's interesting, I don't read the ones that are asking the same question, but sometimes there's a variation on a theme. So this one comes in just a short while ago from Jennifer, who's listening on the Relevant Radio app. And again, parents, this is a topic that just by virtue of the topic is not suitable for children. So please exercise great caution in this issue. And if need be, just turn the radio down for a little while, okay? Fair warning, ready, steady, go. So Jennifer's question is very simple. She says, and this is under the question of the marital act. She says, what if the woman cannot complete the act the natural way? The man and the woman still complete it for childbearing purposes. And I'll just retranslate what she's saying there. The man and the woman complete the act in the natural fashion that is open to the possibility of procreation. Doesn't mean that there will be procreation, but it's at least possible that there could be. But she says, if the woman takes no pleasure in this way, is she free to complete the act another way if the couple still completes the act properly anyway? The church's answer to that question, Jennifer, is yes, but not separate from the act itself. So prior to or immediately after the act is completed, that would be the context within which that would be permissible. And the church would say that this should involve the husband. Otherwise, it would turn into something solitary. And of course, if you start going down that road, it becomes sinful very quickly. So the answer that the church gives is yes, but it has to be that part of it has to take place within the immediate context of the act itself. Now, there's no time frame. It's not like X number of seconds or minutes, nothing like that. But either before this act is accomplished or immediately after. But you couldn't say, well, I'm going to wait till later today and take care of that part. No, because then that would become a sin. And I think you know what I'm driving at there. So not to repeat it too much, but for the purposes of clarity, yes, but within the immediate confines of the act itself. Thanks for the email. Important question. Another one that comes in, and this is from Steve, listening in Minneapolis. He says, Patrick, I'm a frequent listener of the show, and I trust your answers regarding questions of the faith. My question is regarding the church's teaching that any marital embrace must allow for procreation along with promoting unity. Yes, and you're right to say it the way you did. It must be open to the possibility of procreation. It doesn't mean you have to procreate. It doesn't mean that you necessarily will procreate. But that the act, because it's ordered toward that, it has to at least be able to accomplish that possibility. Okay. He continues. My wife has always experienced pain in this regard, which has only...
Everything's under control. Situation normal. We're fine. We're all fine here now. Thank you. How are you?
Okay. We are back. Had a little bit of a glitch there with a gremlin, but we stomped on it. So this is me live back with you again. So my number 888-914-9149. I was reading an email that came in this morning from Steve listening in Minneapolis. And I'm pretty sure that you heard me say that his wife has experienced pain regarding the marital act. Again, parents, this is not age appropriate for children. So please exercise great caution here. Turn the radio down if you need to. Ready, steady, go. He says that after menopause, this problem with pain has only gotten worse. So he says, I'm a cradle Catholic. I've read the catechism and tried to find clarification on this teaching, and all I can conclude is that any sexual / genital activity requires conclusion within and through the full marital union with no exceptions. Yes, that is correct. I have asked two priests for advice during confession regarding this issue, and one gave a vague answer that the unitive aspect is also important, and the other punted. I have offered to abstain from marital relations to stay faithful to Catholic teaching, but my wife, being a non-Catholic Christian, does not understand why, if she is unable to conceive, is the full marital act required. My questions are, Are non-procreative relations a mortal sin? And I'll just take the questions in order here. Are non-procreative relations a mortal sin? I'm going to restate that so that it kind of conforms to the language that the church uses, although I do understand what you're saying. Are variations on a theme with regard to the marital act and the things that are preparatory, typically for most married couples, for the marital act to be completed, is that a mortal sin if you engage in that and there is a conclusion, but it is not the natural conclusion that is ordered toward the possibility of procreation? Yes, that would be a mortal sin. If it's intended to enjoy that pleasure apart from the marriage act, that would be a mortal sin. What, if anything, is discretionary? Well, those things that are proper to married people, those signs of affection, those ways in which the act itself can be perfected. And the word perfected doesn't just mean make it as wonderful as possible, but it also means to complete it. The word to perfect in this context means to bring it to completion properly. So, without being in any way specific here, but I think you can follow my meaning, there are certain things that married couples are able to do, lawfully can do, they glorify God, etc., as signs of affection, as long as it doesn't cross the point where it would inevitably lead to a conclusion that is not natural and not open to life. So those kinds of things are discretionary, yes, but you have to exercise prudence and caution, because human physiology and anatomy being what it is, it doesn't take a lot before things begin to, they're going to go in that direction no matter what happens. So you have to be very careful that you don't go up to that point. And also, the way in which the act itself is completed for the man cannot take place at all. And the same is true for the woman. Now, the act itself, just to complete the act in a way that is open to the possibility of human life, just physiologically speaking, it is not necessary for the woman to achieve that kind of completion. In order for it to be considered a complete act, it's sufficient for the husband. But neither the wife nor the husband has a right to enjoy that pleasure apart from the marital act completed in that way. Okay, next question he asks, what weight does the unitive aspect of the marital act apart from procreation carry? And does it make a difference if one's, I'm going to leave that last part off. Okay, so what weight does the unitive aspect of the marital act carry apart from procreation? The church historically has taught that the primary end of marriage is procreation. Now, that does not mean that the church is saying you must crank out as many babies as you possibly can for as long as you possibly can. The church has never said that. The church's teaching on this issue is simply that in order for the act within marriage to be moral, it must be at least open to that possibility. And I know I probably sound like a broken record because I keep saying that phrase over and over again, but judging from all the emails, and I've only read you the tip of the iceberg of all the emails that have come in recent weeks, there's been a deluge of them. And so the reason I'm spending the time doing this is because it is an important topic, number one, that is, from what I can see, dramatically misunderstood by a lot of lay people and even some priests too. So with all due respect, that's the reason why I'm trying to underscore this point, so that you have clarity in your mind and nobody's going to bamboozle you with false information. Again, the primary end of marriage, and in the term end here, it refers to the goal. You know, things are goal-oriented. Your eye is goal-oriented. What's the goal of the eye? It's to see. Your ear is goal-oriented. What's the goal of the ear? It's to hear. And as you consider not only the individual parts of your body, but the systems in your body, you see that all of them are ordered toward a certain purpose. They have a certain goal-orientedness. And that's how God made us. And it is true of all the parts of your body, and in a particular way, since we're talking about this, it's true of your reproductive system. And your reproductive system really has no physical purpose other than the ability to procreate. And if we didn't have that ability, And if it weren't protected and enshrined within the safety of the intimacy of the husband and the wife in a stable marriage where they love each other and there's mutual self-giving and love with responsibility, etc., then we would have no people, because it would simply become a hobby for pleasure, for hedonism, and often is that. So the church is saying, no, there's much more here going on than you realize. So back to the conclusion of your email. So the weight, you're asking, like, what is the relative weight, or what is the relative importance, might be another way to put it, between the unitive aspect and the procreative aspect. The unitive aspect, by the way, this refers to, and this I quoted from the Catechism several minutes ago when I was responding to another lady's email, about how the unitive is for the enhancement of the unity of the spouses, a deepening of their friendship, a deepening of their intimacy, a renewal of their marriage covenant, physically renewing it in a certain sense through the marital act. It's for their friendship and their love for each other and all of those things. That's what the church means when it says the unitive aspect. And yes, the unitive aspect is designed by God to provide a lot of pleasure, a lot of pleasure. You married people know what I'm talking about. God wants that in marriage. It doesn't mean you have to have that. It doesn't mean that every time you have the marital embrace that it must be, you know, at its most extreme level. No. That's not the point. The point, though, is that whatever pleasure is lawfully enjoyed by married people engaged in the marital embrace is good and pleasing to Almighty God. It glorifies God. There's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing to be ashamed of or worried about. He made this for you, kind of like Adam and Eve in the garden, but different. So he made this for you. So that carries a very big weight. It is very important. But you can't, what the church is saying is, you can't subordinate one to the other, or worse yet, you can't remove one or the other, because if you remove the procreative act, or the procreative purpose or end of marriage, now it's pure pleasure, and that's hedonism. And that is no responsibility at all. Sometimes I've used the analogy of, if you enjoy a delicious meal, the finest wine, and it's just rich, wonderful food, and you eat as much as you can, and then you go next door and you barf it all up again, that's gluttony on stilts. Because you're just enjoying the food for the sake of the pleasure, and there's no responsibility there, because you no longer have to regulate what you eat. You no longer have to pay attention to calories and sodium and all the things, because you have to be a good steward of your body. You have a responsibility to maintain your health as best you can. So it's not a perfect analogy, but I think it's a helpful analogy, that in the same way within marriage, if this is simply reduced to pleasure and nothing more, that would be a serious sin. If you did something that would be either unnatural, or sterilization, for example, or contraceptives, or certain actions, that kind of thing. Definitely a mortal sin. Now, if you were to remove the unitive act, or the unitive end of the marital act, now you have completely dissociated the act from the natural love and intimacy between the husband and the wife. And that, of course, would be simply basically breeding. And that would be also a serious sin. So the two go together. And I don't know that I could say to you that they have an exactly equal weight or an exactly equal importance, but the church just simply says both are very important and both are integral to the act, and neither one can be intentionally omitted. Okay, and he's almost done with his email. He says, I want to be a loving husband who does not inflict pain on my wife, but I'm not sure what is allowed, and I would love your insights. Thank you. So those are my thoughts. And again, just trying to translate what the church says on this issue. I hope that's helpful. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show. That can include your phone calls. If you want to call me, call 888-914-9149. And by the way, before we go, please don't forget that the clock is ticking. And you only have now about 5 days left to go to relevantradio.com/set, S-E-T, and sign up for our drawing that is going to reward 200 of you, lucky listeners, with a big, beautiful, hand-painted nativity scene, which you can see a picture of by going to relevantradio.com/set. You can evangelize your neighbors, evangelize the Amazon drivers, anybody who walks by your front yard or your porch. It'll be there telling them the reason for the season. But you can't get it, you can't register to get it if you don't go to relevantradio.com/set. Please go there now and sign up. I'll be right back. This hour is sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare, the first to offer comprehensive sharing for prescription medications. Check now to see how much you can save. Go to CatholicHealthShare.com.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Hey, Cyrus, did you hear that part where I was talking about how this topic about the Marriage Act and kind of all the things associated with it seems to be on everybody's mind, and it's generated a lot of emails? Remember that part?
Yes. Yes, I do. I do remember that part.
You, of all people, would remember that. Well, in the last 3 minutes, three more emails have come in on the topic. And that's on top of the four or so that came in the first hour. And that's on top of the, you know, scores of emails that came in the last day or two. So I want to be responsive to the topic that people are interested in. I'm here to talk about just about anything, honestly. So please don't feel as though this is the marriage hour or this is the hour where all they talk about is the Marriage Act. No, I'm willing to do that because it's important, number one. And I think it's a topic, as I said earlier, that a lot of people, for whatever reason, they're really unclear about certain aspects of this. And since many of you, maybe most of you, are married, it affects you directly. So please understand, I want to discuss this topic only for as long as you do. And when the emails stop, then I'll stop. But I don't want to ignore your emails on a topic that is so important. So that's the rationale behind my talking about this seemingly endlessly. It's not by choice. It's by response to what seems to be a real need out there. So three more emails came in the last few minutes. This one comes in from Juliet, and she's listening. I'm not going to say where she's listening. That's a rather unique name, so I don't want to say where she's listening. But she says, what are appropriate signs of affection when courting? All the talk about completing the act in marriage also applies to abstaining in too many signs of affection while courting. Can you talk about this for non-married people? God bless you. I love your show. Well, thank you, Juliet. God bless you, too. So why don't I just begin by saying, here's what the Catechism says on that topic. So it's in the section about chastity, and you could begin reading in paragraph 2348 and 2349 and 2350. So I will just go to the heart of the issue, and you can read the first two paragraphs. I'll read the third one for you. Those who are engaged to marry are called to live chastely in continence. I'm going to just pause there for a moment. A few definitions here. Celibacy has to do with marriage. You can be celibate, but incontinent. And I don't mean incontinent like you need adult diapers. That's not what continence means in this context. Continence in this context means you abstain from all sexual relations. So you can be married and continent, meaning that you're married lawfully in the eyes of God and the church, and yet you can abstain from sexual relations. You can be unmarried, as in celibate, and you can be continent, which means that you don't engage in any sexual activity, or you can be celibate and incontinent, meaning that you can be not married, but you could be messing around. I think that's pretty clear. Okay. So those who are engaged to marry are called to live chastely in continence. They should see in this time of testing a discovery of mutual respect, an apprenticeship in fidelity. That's such a beautiful phrase there. And the Catechism isn't often given to beautiful phraseology, but I think this is one of them. An apprenticeship in fidelity. You're an apprentice. You're learning what does it mean to be faithful. And one way to learn that in a very particular way is to be faithful to the gospel, to what Jesus says about chastity and purity, even to the point where Jesus says, as you know, I tell you that if you look at a woman with lust in your heart, you've already committed adultery with her. I mean, talk about a sin that just about every single human being has committed at some point in their adult life, and some people commit it constantly. So it's not something that any of us can point fingers at others or throw stones or look down our noses, because it's something that every one of us, if you get old enough, you're going to fall into that sin. But my reason for bringing it up is Jesus says that this is an example of you have to govern your mind. So chastity has to do with the actions of your body. Purity has to do with your mind and what you allow yourself or don't allow yourself to think. So continuing, this is a time of testing of discovery of mutual respect. It's an apprenticeship in fidelity and the hope of receiving one another from God. They should reserve for marriage the expressions of affection that belong to married love. They will help each other grow in chastity. Now, I'll leave it at that, but that's really the foundation of the answer. So what are the expressions of affection that belong to married love? I think that's pretty obvious. So the basic expressions of affection that belong to married love, you should never do that unless you're married. And the things that are reserved for married love that are ordered toward bringing married love to that form of completion in the marriage act should also be avoided. Now, the church doesn't say you can't hold hands. The church doesn't say you can't hug each other. The church doesn't say that you can't, you know, enjoy certain marks of affection. You have that right to do that, because those are, by their very nature, not sexual. But as soon as you and your boyfriend, or you and your girlfriend, and I'm not talking to you, Juliet, I'm just saying you rhetorically, as soon as you start showing expressions of affection that are intended and are inclined to move things to a whole different level, that's where you should draw the line and say, nope, we can't do that. Because that now is intruding on the territory of what God has ordained for marriage, and we're not married yet. So I hope that answers your question, and thanks for writing. Second email of the three that just came in, this is from Marcia, and she's asking about the current topic. She says, what if the wife can't engage in relations because of, let's say, surgery, and that might make it permanently impossible? And her husband says that it's okay to help him because it's medically necessary due to buildup. And I'll leave it at that. I think you can figure out what she's talking about there. The church says no, because as we were talking about earlier, it is no longer the marital act. It is no longer what God designed for marriage. Suddenly now it is basically masturbation. That's all it is. And so the claim about, the claim about buildup, et cetera, that's just the way things are. So if you are a celibate and continent, chaste priest, for example, it's just part of your vocation. And, you know, there is no medical necessity for that. It's just part of life. If you are in the military and you're serving overseas, let's say, and you haven't been home to see your wife in 2 or 3 years, 4 years, whatever it is. Sometimes that happens. That's just how it is. That's just how you live. And you're not going to die. You're not going to have problems. It's just the way your body is made as a man. And it's not necessary. It's not medically necessary. So that's the long and the short of it. Now, if you want the section in the catechism that talks about this specifically, you want to read paragraph, where did it go? You want to read, oops, I skipped past it here. So you want to read, paragraphs 2351 through, let's see, no, that's not the right one. Where did it go? Well, just start reading in 2337. And it has a lengthy section there on this particular topic, and that's what your husband is asking for. And the church is really clear that is seriously sinful for the reasons I just mentioned. Now, let's go to the third of the three emails that just came in. And this one is, I'm going to leave her anonymous because she asked me to, and she's listening on the Relevant Radio app. I just heard, she says, that if the act is not done, the marriage is not valid. It's embarrassing, however. I haven't been able to, as when we first got married, it was just too painful. And now, years later, my husband says he can't because of a medical situation. So we have been married for years, and I've never have completed the marital act. What do I do? Is my sacrament not valid? I am most concerned that it may not be valid. Okay, I would like to completely put your mind at ease. This has nothing to do with the validity of your sacrament of marriage, holy matrimony. So if, in fact, you were never able to, you and your husband were never able to consummate your marriage, nonetheless, your marriage is still valid, all other things assuming being equal. So if you married according to the laws of the church, you're both baptized, and all the things that would go into answering that question, assuming that that was all the case, your marriage is valid from the get-go. Now, a marriage is valid initially by ratification. So we can say that the married couple enjoys a valid marriage that has been ratified. And by that, it means that when you publicly express your consent, each to the other in your wedding, and you enter into the marriage contract, that's when your marriage becomes valid. And so it's valid and ratified. And then for almost all couples, not all, but almost all couples, the marriage then becomes valid and it's ratified and it's consummated. So the consummation of the marriage does not make the marriage valid or invalid. It is the normal way of completing this process. So there's nothing whatsoever for you to worry about. And I'm glad you brought this up, because I'm certain that I did not say that if the act is not done in marriage, it's not valid. I'm sure I didn't say that, but I'm really glad that you asked me, because I wouldn't want you to be under a misconception that in any way the consummation of the marriage is required for the marriage to be valid. Okay. And one last little thing here, not that you asked this question, but it's worth thinking about. Here's how you can know that the couple is validly married before they consummate the marriage. And that is because if they weren't validly married, then when they consummated the marriage, it would be a serious sin, because it would be the sin of fornication. Two unmarried people doing something that's proper to married people. So that's how you can show your work. If this were a math problem, you can kind of show your work there and say, well, this is how I can be certain that the marriage is valid, because only validly married people are lawfully able to consummate the marriage. There we go. I hope that's helpful. I really do. I really, really do. Let's go to Maria now in Copley, Ohio. Good morning, Maria. Welcome.
Hi, Patrick. Thank you. With all of these questions about the marital act and all of that, I was in so much interest in it. I was thinking maybe wanted to make a request that this be your next book, maybe.
Wouldn't that be something? Well, I don't think that's a book we could give away indiscriminately, because children should not read such a book, right?
Right.
Well, right, who knows?
Also, I
tell you what, I want to hear your question, but I ran out of time. So stand by, Maria, and I'll come right back to you on the other side of this quick timeout. Maria in Copley, Ohio, you will be up first. If you want to be on the program, call this number, 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. I'll be right back.